With Redefine Ed, the podcast, I'm Travis Pillow, one generation of education reformer to another. That's what's on tap in this episode, as our very own Denisha Merriweather talks with longtime school choice advocate Virginia Walden Ford.
Hello and welcome to Redefine, your home for news about parental school choice and education reform.
My name is Denisha Merriweather with Redefine Ed, and I'm joined with Miss Virginia Walden Ford. She is a fantastic advocate for school choice. She has an amazing story. We have so much in common, and so thank you so much for agreeing to come on with us.
Well, I am so excited to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
So you're an advocate for school choice, and I know you mainly focus on the academic accomplishments of your son, but can you tell us about your story? So I read some of your story, and you seem to have had a great story yourself about being the only Black student in school, and both of your parents being school teachers, public school teachers at that, and I can only imagine the reading materials and the learning tools that your parents surrounded you with and wanting the best education for you. How would you describe your parents' involvement in your education?
Well, my parents were, as you said, they were teachers, and so our house was just constantly a classroom. I mean, it was always learning going on there. I have four sisters. And so the five of us were always at the table trying to navigate through the education system with our parents. And I guess as children, we used to be kind of mad about it because everybody would be playing and we'd be doing homework with our parents. And because they were teachers, they were certainly involved in what we were doing and how we were doing. And so it was pretty exciting. It really gave us early on a real sense of the importance of education. There was never any doubt in our minds that you have to continue learning as time goes on, because that's one of the things my parents always said to us. My dad was actually the first Black assistant superintendent of the Little Rock School District here in Arkansas. My mom was one of four Black teachers that integrated white schools in Arkansas in the 60s. And my twin sister and I were a part of a group of students that after the Little Rock Nine initially integrated Central High School, years later, 10 years later, when there was a real push to continue the desegregation process, we were handpicked with 130 other kids to go into Central, which had 4,000 students, mostly white. So it was a big experience, and I remember it was not one that I really wanted to go to. I wanted to go to the Black high school, but my father always said that I had a responsibility to take advantage of these opportunities that were available to us, because I have younger siblings, and if I didn't do it, then my younger siblings somehow would be affected by it. And that was kind of how I got started thinking about, as an adult, making sure that I was a part of the solution and not a part of the problem when it came to education. So they have a hard, strong impact on us. We were the kids that if you made straight A's and a B, Daddy said, "How come you made a B?" You know, those kind of parents that I would go, "Oh, well, you know, I didn't do my best." And their message to us was always do your best.
Yeah.
But
you credit them.
Be able to. I do. I mean, whatever I became, whoever I am now, was definitely because of my parents.
And they, like you said, they seem to have given you the standard of what a proper education looks like, and even what your role as a parent is supposed to be in your child's education.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I remember when my first child went to school, my dad said, "So what are you doing?" You know, I'm like, "I don't know, I take him to school, I drop him off." And he said, "You have to be a part of your child's education, be a partner with your teacher, with the child's teacher, and not just a parent that stands back, complains, and moans and groans that the child is not getting what they need." So I understand that, you know, parents and neighborhoods and churches and communities all need to be a part of making sure their children get what they need. That was really driven into our heads as young mothers, you know, you have a part to play in this. And as a result, I became an advocate and a partner in my children's education.
So your father, even while you were older, was still giving you that advice, saying, you know, to be involved in your child's education. That's just
absolutely, absolutely.
Wow,
and my mother, Yeah. My parents were involved in all of the grandchildren, and what they did in school, and when we called, the first thing they would say is, how are the kids doing in school, before we had any other kind of conversation. So, they continually, even as grandparents and even as we grew into young adults, became a part of that generation of making sure the kids were educated.
Opportunity Live, they kind of cited your story and talked about you in one of the articles, and it said 20 years ago, and this is a quote from you saying, 20 years ago, you were a single mother struggling to raise your three kids in D.C., and every day felt like a battle to ensure that your kids stayed safe and out of trouble. When you moved to D.C., did you live in what most would call a good neighborhood, or...
Tanisha, I lived in a struggling, lots of single mother, working class, African-American community that, had its problems. But there were a lot of single mothers. I don't know why. And everybody seemed to be struggling to make sure their kids had what they needed. The schools, unfortunately, in our communities were not the schools that were classified the best schools in D.C. They were difficult schools where kids were having a difficult time. I was really blessed with my two older kids because they're really driven and bright, and they really tried hard to get through a system that oftentimes was not supportive of what they what they needed. But they made it through, and but not without a lot of help. I mean, there were a lot of people that kind of band together to make sure that my kids got what they, those two at least, got what they needed. And they were in lots of programs. I spent a lot of time running them around to mentoring programs, and 100 Black Men my son was in, and academic programs that would benefit my daughter, who was an incredible writer, and my son was in the science and math. So they did really well. And I was really proud of them, despite the fact that oftentimes school was not as supportive of what their needs were. But with my third child, my youngest son, he was one of those kids that people oftentimes just kind of disregard. Well, he got in trouble, so we're not going to really pay any attention to him or try to help him. And so we ran into difficult times when he got into school, and particularly in middle school. And it was at that point that I realized that if I didn't find something different for him, if we couldn't get him in an environment that he would respond to, then I was going to lose him. And this was a time when that little working class neighborhood was transitioning into a more troubled neighborhood, and with a lot of drug activity and gang activity, and it seemed like my youngest son was just getting really pulled into that, and it scared me to death. I just, because I always said I would never lose my kids, my boys especially, to the streets, but I knew that if I didn't do something, then the possibility that this child would not succeed was right staring me in the face. So, I thought about it, and I struggled, and I had no money. I was barely paying for the expenses that we had. So I knew that private schools were just not something I could even think about. I couldn't afford it, and I'm really proud. So I couldn't go to my parents. I had to work this out. And a neighbor actually offered to help us. He had moved back into the neighborhood. He had a daughter, a young daughter, but he wanted to give something back to a community that has helped him. And he offered to help us pay William's tuition to any school, private school that I chose. And we chose Archbishop Carroll High School in D.C. And it was just an amazing opportunity for William to be in an environment that was different, a smaller school. I'm a faith person, so I like that. You know, he would be in a school where he would be surrounded by, you know, people of faith. And he just excelled. I mean, and I'm not talking about like months later. Almost immediately, he began to really do well. And I remember asking him, you know, why are you doing so well at school? You've been fighting me about going to school. And he said, this is the first time I really believe that people care about what I learn or not, other than you. And this is a place where people, you know, listen to me. And he really, really did well and thrived and got involved in athletics and has really become an amazing man. And that was my first time realizing if a child is in an environment that meets his needs, then he will thrive and he will excel. And if we raise our expectations for kids going in, I say, William, you can do it. And so he believed, along with the support of others who believed in him, that he could, and he did.
That's awesome. You sent him to a Catholic school. Why did you choose a Catholic school for your son?
Well, I like Archbishop Carroll. I like the vibe. I like that there were people of, you know, of faith, people that cared about kids. And and so it was just a really good choice. I had researched it. I knew that there were a lot of people that had gone there that had excelled and succeeded in life. And it was just a really good choice for us. We looked at other schools, but this one, they had a strong athletic program, and William ran track. And I knew that they would nurture his academic life, as you know, along with his athletic life. It was just a really good vibe. It felt good. I remember walking into the school with him, and we had looked at a number of schools, and we walked into that school, and something about him changed. He started smiling, and this was a kid never smiled, and he felt good. So, you know, I urge parents all the time, you know, when you're looking at schools, when you're looking at educational environments, look at your kids, see how they respond, you know, and he liked it. So, by the time we left, it was like, okay, this is it. You know, this is where he'll do well. And he did. I was always so proud of him. When I think about it, and I try not to, I know that had it not been for the scholarship and a chance to go to a school that served him, this story might not have ended so well, because I watched kids in our neighborhood not do well. You know, some of his closest friends have really struggled in life. And so I really believe that having an education that meets the needs of the child changes the direction of their lives.
Yeah, and our stories are similar but kind of different, where I'm basically the kid in the story who I share my story, and I've shared my experience so many times like you about how, you know, growing up in a poor neighborhood and going to my local public school and being in that, you know, you talked about how William, you saw him being, you know, sinking into the culture of the neighborhood and that transition, that turnaround when he started to go to private school. Like that was me too. And like, personally, share my story over and over. It's been really therapeutic in a way. It's been like a personal therapy. And it's really helped me to kind of heal from my past and create like a new narrative for my life. And, you know, but now I struggle because I think that people are tired of hearing about my experience over and over, and they don't, you know, they don't want to hear the same story. Have you ever felt like that? Like, people are tired of hearing about your story and your son and the benefits of school choice?
I don't. I really don't. I mean, I really don't. I think parents never get tired of it. I think parents look for hope every day. And all the years that I've been involved in this and I've gone around and talked to parents, I have never, ever felt that, you know, somebody wasn't holding on to it. And, you know, if it's just one person in the audience that looks you in the eye and you can see in their faces that they are really, you know, holding on to what you have to say, then in my opinion, it's always worth it. If I felt that way, then I think that it would make me really sad. So if think about it this way, if your story is a great story, I listened to it. It is a great story, and I'm
Thank
so
you.
Proud of young people such as yourselves that not only have had the opportunities and taken advantage of it, but continue to do something in support of school choice and in support of other children. You know, by the time the DC Opportunity Scholarship Program passed in Washington, my kids were grown. So my kids were never able to be the beneficiaries of DCOSP, but other kids were. And those are the kids that are part of my heart. They're my like my kids. Sometimes just for motivation before I speak somewhere, I listen to student stories. You know, I'll read student stories because the reason that I do this is because of you and so many other kids that are out there that would not have had the same opportunities. The direction of their lives would have been totally different. The journey would have not been the same had it not been for these programs. I want to hear it over and over again and more and more and more, which is why I continue to fight, you know.
When did that switch go off from making just being a mom, from making the right decision for your son, and then actually this becoming a passionate career choice of advocating for parents' rights?
I believe that the day that William said to me, "This is the first time anybody's cared about what I learned," I knew that it went beyond our family. You know, I mean, this could have been a great ending. I mean, my kid got a private scholarship to go to a private school. He did well. Story ends. We're happy and we go along with life. But as this was going on, I looked around and my neighbor's kids were not faring so well. You know, their kids were having trouble in school. Their children were, you know, struggling to get through this whole neighborhood culture and try not to get pulled into the mean streets of D.C., if you will. And I just really believe, I heard my father's voice, and my father said, if you cannot be a part, you need to be a part of the solution. You know, don't be a part of the problem. Too many people see what's going on out there and sit back and do nothing. And I believe that, you know, we have a responsibility to not only help our own children, but to help the masses of children in this country, you know, be a part of an educational environment that works for them. So it was like, you know, what can I do to make a difference? You know, I mean, I was a neighborhood activist anyway, you know, I worked with the neighborhood group, and I knew that this was something that could be, you know, really bigger, you know, that can impact lots and lots of kids. So right at that time, this was in the 90s, there was a scholarship program that was being proposed by a couple of legislators. One of them was African-American. It was bipartisan. And they asked me to come up and tell my story. Somebody heard about it. And I did. And I realized at that moment when I was looking at all those members of Congress, people I saw on TV, people that I never thought I would have the opportunity to talk to, and I realized that whatever I could do to help, I would, you know, and it did become a passion. This is my life. This is, you know, what I believe. I go to sleep thinking about children doing well, and I wake up thinking about children doing well. But this was a blessing. You remember, I'm in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. We're fighting for a federal scholarship program, and you got 3,300 parents. You know, we had such an outpouring of parents that got involved in advocating for DCOSP that I was even surprised. You know, I mean, parents would call me, they would come support for what we were doing, they would come to rallies, and, you know, it just became so big and important, and I watched the faces of the children that it probably would never have had a chance had it not been for the scholarship program. And I've watched their faces when they got into the program. It was an amazing emotional experience for me. And it was one that I couldn't pull myself away from. You know, the more kids that did well, the more I wanted to see other kids do well. And so you find yourself just really, and I know you find yourself caught up in it too, because you want to make sure that you can, whatever you do, whatever you say, will make a difference for another child. You know, I still keep in touch with lots of the kids that went through DCOSP at the beginning. And I'm just, and they're adults now, they're finishing college. And I'm just amazed at what I see, because I remember what they said to me at the beginning. They didn't have any hope. They were hopeless, and their parents were as well. So you can't help but get involved. I mean, my heart is just with these families and with families all over the country and their quest to make sure that their children are educated properly.
Yeah. You've seen a big evolution of school choice over the years, and now it is big, like it's huge, and everybody's getting on the crave, you know. What would you tell, like, my generation from the battles that, you know, faced 15, 20 years ago when this school choice evolution first started?
What I would say is stay strong. Stand shoulder to shoulder with parents. Make sure that you're a part of the solution. You know, I am getting close to retiring, and at some point I'm not going to be involved in this, and my fear has always been that, you know, we wouldn't pass this on to the next generation. But I have just seen so many young people such as yourself that are standing up. But it is hard. You make a lot of sacrifices. You get a lot of people that oppose what you're saying, and I say stay strong and make sure that you keep your eye on what's important. You know, and what's important is the children. I used to tell the parents in our effort to keep a picture of their children, because we started before cell phones got popular. So keep a picture of your children in your pocket. And every time you get discouraged, and every time you get sad, and every time you lose a battle, look at those children and say, "This, you are who I'm working for. You are who I'm fighting for, and I won't give up." So that's the message that I want to give. Just keep fighting, you know. When I started this, I thought I would probably be doing this 2 or 3 years. Now, 20 years later, I'm still in the fight. And yeah. So it did mean giving up a lot, and it meant making a lot of sacrifices and getting beat up and people talking about you in a negative way and calling you the mouthpiece for this group and the mouthpiece for that group. And it used to really hurt my feelings. But then I'd look at my son, and I'd look at how well he's doing and how this might not have been possible had it not been for my involvement. And I look at some of these young people that I got to know during the DCOSP fight who are doing well and, you know, having a wonderful future.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned that mouthpiece and being kind of criticized with, you know, aligning. I guess for me, I think I'm the typical millennial where when it comes to politics, I consider myself an independent. I really get kind of frustrated with the groupiness of politics side. And I know my mom, she always told me there are two things you never talk about: religion and politics. But I think that the reason why we have so many problems is because we don't talk about these things casually. So has there ever been a time when you were like afraid to align with a side?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm very conservative, but my friends are not so much. Mm-hmm. Or at least they don't verbally say it. You know, they don't publicly say it. And so, yeah, you know, I used to get really nervous about the fact that the members of Congress that I was the closest to, the members of Congress that I work with the closest, were Republicans, actually. Mm-hmm. And I used to get nervous about what my friends would say. But, you know, at some point I said, you know, this is about kids. I really don't care what they say, you know, because I'm going to continue to fight for kids, and whomever is taking the lead, that's who I'm going to align myself with. It's just simple as that. And you can't be afraid of what people are going to say. There have been some probably lots of negative things said about me, and the fact that, you know, I publicly said John Boehner was the champion of DCOSP and many other Republicans, Sue Collins and so many. I've said it publicly for years, and, you know, everybody had a comment to make or oppose what I was saying, but it doesn't matter because this is not about them. It ain't about me. It's about children. And as long as you can stay true to what you're fighting for, then those things just become, you know, not worth getting upset about or worrying about. But I've had some tough experience. I've had phone calls where people said ugly things to me, and I've had death threats, and, you know, and it was scary. You know, I mean, there were times when I had to sit back and go, do I really want to publicly say all this stuff? And my heart would say absolutely, because, again, I would look at my child, and I would see how well he was doing. I would look at young people like yourself and see how well you're doing, and I'd say, it's worth it. Whatever I have to go through, it's worth it.
Do you, so you think your political background was influenced by Ed Choice?
See, my mama told me not to talk about politics and religion, too. I believe that I'm going to support what I believe is right, regardless of what my political position is. I'm going to support who's talking the right way, who is supporting kids, who is making sure kids can do well, who is standing up for kids. I don't care what party they belong to. I care about children. You know, I think my life has been influenced by Ed Choice, my life. And so whatever decisions I've made through life have been because I care about making sure the kids get what they need.
Do you see any challenges that may come up in the horizon with the national education system actually improving with charter schools and then vouchers and tax credits?
I believe that we are still, unfortunately, fighting some of the battles we had. But I also believe that there's hope. And when you look at, 30 school choice programs, 30 states that have school choice programs, plus the District of Columbia, and you look at those and you say 10 years ago or 15 years ago, we didn't have any of these programs, you know. And so I believe there's always hope, but I still believe that we have challenges ahead. And I think that we can't stop fighting. I think that those of us that have been in the fight for a long time, so at least for a while, we need to get our armor cleaned up and ready to support the generation that will lead the fight. And I'm ready, you know, to do whatever I can. So I think that we do have challenges ahead. I'd like to think they're not as big as they have been in the past. And I'd like to think that there are so many young people such as yourself that have been through programs that have reached such, you know, great success, will be able to come and tell your stories, you know, and make sure that you know, people hear them and people see that these programs have actually worked for kids. At the beginning, we didn't have that. We didn't have kids to stand up and be examples and say, I went through this program and I've done well. Without this program, I would not have done so well. So, you know, so we have more tools for the fight. You know, I think there's always going to be opposition. I think that the way the traditional public school system is managed and maintained and run, with the teachers union so opposed to school choice programs and having so much influence, I think it's going to always be opposition and strong opposition. They have what we don't have, and that's finances, you know. So we're grassroots. We got to fight from the street, you know, and that's what I'm prepared to continue to do. And I think that coming up over the next few years, there are going to be a lot of battles, but I have hope. I look at the programs that exist right now, and I get excited and happy and anxious to see how children are doing, and that gives me hope. And I think hope, even starting at the beginning of this fight, was what got us to this point. Mm-hmm. Hope.